Everyone, thank you for tuning. That's a great start. Everyone, thank you for tuning into the Film Fund podcast, the first episode ever of the Film Fund podcast. As you can see by my great introduction, I have never done a podcast before, but I am your host, Thomas Verity, founder and CEO at the Film Fund. We are an online film funding platform that offers a simpler alternative to funding short films. We funded about 20 films to date. A lot of them are currently in pre-production because of COVID, but we're still making funding available. So if you have a short film that you've been working on, or even just an idea for one, you write one sentence pitching the idea for your short, how you would use some of the funding, and you can have a chance to receive up to $10,000 and other prizes to make it. So we're currently running three contests, documentary contests, a narrative contest, and a new music video contest. So that is my little plug for the Film Fund. We're always running contests. That deadline is December 8th, 2020, I believe. But if you're listening to this at a later date, we're constantly running contests. We're doing about four per year right now. So be sure to check thefilmfund.co/contests for more information on that to get everything up to date. So that's my plug for the Film Fund. Super formal, super boring. Well, not boring. It's actually super exciting, and I'm very passionate about it being the CEO, as I should be. But I'm more interested in this new podcast medium. So I have never done a podcast before, but we have this awesome community here with the Film Fund. All of the funding, you know, we don't have giant venture funding or anything like that. Everything, for the most part, this isn't a hard number, but I want to say 99% of our funding we give filmmakers is from the community itself. So when you're a filmmaker and you're pitching your entries, you submit a small entry fee, either $25 or $35 if you want to receive feedback on that entry. And that goes into what I call the community funding pool. And the prizes you win, whether they're Kitsplit gift cards or Adobe Premiere subscriptions or what have you, color grading services from some sponsors like Maestro Filmworks, with the exception of a few sponsors we have been getting, all of that funding comes from the community. And I realized we don't engage with that community enough. We do some blog posts with, you know, previous filmmakers called Funded Filmmaker Showcases to ask them why they do what they do and showcase their films. But I think the podcast is a great way to give our community some more insights from our successful filmmakers and some stories they have as well. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Tim Viola, our very first winner ever of the Film Fund. And it's funny, we receive entries from all over the world, Bangladesh, the UK, Australia, and we're based in Philadelphia, and our first winner ever somehow is right down the street, also in the Philadelphia area. So I just thought that was incredibly hilarious. So I've gotten to know Tim through different film festivals we've gone to together and just being local. So Tim, I will shut up and you can tell me a little bit about yourself, why you got into film, your experience, all that fun stuff.
Yeah, that was actually a really pleasant surprise when I found out you were local. That was pretty cool. Mainly because, you know, here in Philly, we're trying to build the film community. And it's a huge thing that I think is growing exponentially. When you think of film, you think of New York, LA, but Philly is starting to really get its legs. All right. So first of all, Tom, I really wanted to thank you for everything you guys have been doing at the Film Fund. I think the model that you have is filling an important gap in film funding, especially as film becomes more democratized. You know, when you think about all of the different aspects of filmmaking that we have to consider, everything from pre-production to production to post-production, you know, this every element of that workflow and that chain has got some funding need. So I think it's a huge testament to the work you're doing. I don't like to talk about myself, but I'll give it a go.
Well, that's the whole point of today, so you better.
I'd rather talk about the work in film. So my background is I started shooting. It's kind of a cliche story. I started shooting when I was, you know, really young. We made basement movies in my parents' basement, completely destroyed every basement my parents have ever owned. Got really good at making sets out of bed sheets and duct tape and cardboard. Probably literally went through about, I don't know, I think we completely destroyed, three or four of my parents' VHS camcorders, trying to enact some kind of battle scene in some
VHS. So this was 19. Are we going to go there?
You can go there if you want, but let's just say it was the tail end of VHS. How about we?
That's fine with me.
It added some, old school filtering. Anyway, so we did that, and then I kind of, you know, every teacher I've ever had said, listen, this is a thing for you. Like, you aren't so great at writing reports on books and things like that. You might want to just make everything a film. Like, okay, we can do that.
So insulting you, but also building.
Yeah, it was like a backhanded compliment. Like, you know, you're, you know, I don't think you're really quite grasping the whole like formal structure of MLA format. I'm like, yeah, this sucks because you can't really, you know, express yourself that way. So we started, I started just doing everything in terms of making these little movies, and everyone started resonating with them. And then we, you know, started doing like TV productions in high school. And we actually did the first kind of reality show in high school, followed this, couple, kind of on their journey of dating. And, you know, it was one of those things where all these teachers were against it. It wasn't even, we're not talking like anything kind of crazy out of line, but it was real. And it was fun. It was a whole series we ran on our kind of closed circuit TV, and it was hot. It was popular. And you know, when that, the bug,
and this is a high school project.
This is a high school project. Yeah. And it was the bug.
So you ran it on the school network. So
the school network. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that got me internships at local news stations. We got on the front page of the Philly Inquirer. Like it was just fun kind of like, I kept getting all these signals like, you should probably do this for a living, or at least pursue it as a
art. What was the name of that early project?
The one that got a lot of attention was called, well, there was the high school reality show. And my buddy from high school would kill me right now because I forget what it was called.
Oh my gosh.
It was, and then there was the one that got the kind of the regional attention was a film called Shadows that we did. It was a kind of a science fiction-y. Yeah.
So that was, Shadows was more so the one that you remember as being your first kind of important project.
That was a feature that we shot over the course of a summer while I went to, I was attending summer school for failing physics.
Oh my god, I love it. Wait, you said you were building sets and you were good at building sets, but you failed physics, so I guess that explains why all the basements were destroyed.
Yep, pretty much. We didn't really have a good grasp of how things you know, related to each other in terms of weight. So learned physics a different way, but that was so I passed, if anyone's curious. But it was really about you know, the bug had bit me, and to me, this was like the way this is, I felt most, and I'm sure you feel like you're yourself, but when you're on set and when you're working with actors and when you're working with composers and when you're writing it, you feel most alive. And as cheesy as that sounds, but there's something, it electrifies you in a way that nothing else does. And I think whatever you do, whatever profession you choose, if that's happening, you need to double down on that.
Exactly. I 100% agree. Even just, you know, with COVID, that's been so difficult. My heart goes out to all the filmmakers out there who just have not been able to experience that feeling. I mean, I feel alive on set, like when you said, just completely invigorated, whether it's something corporate or something narrative, preferably something narrative, but even just being on a set creating something is just such a powerful feeling. And that's another reason I wanted to do this podcast, to get, I guess, not word out's the wrong word, but just get some... this is going to sound weird, but just touch filmmaking again, because it sucks. You know, I mean, sets are coming back and I've seen some safe sets guidelines out there. But you know, I thought, why not engage with these people who are just not able to do what they love? And we are seeing some productions come back, which is great, but it hit us hard. But I mean, one thing I think is so, so important is community, and having that community there, be like, oh, well, I can't shoot anything today, but maybe I could shoot something from inside my house. And we did some COVID stuff like that over social media. That was so, so cool to see. But using that as a segue, I guess, to community, I had such an amazing time going out to LA to Dances with Films. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that experience with the Film Fund. Tim's film Americano played at Dances with Films in Los Angeles. I guess it was last summer?
God, it feels like years ago, doesn't it, at this point?
I know. It feels like 10 years ago, this COVID vacuum we're in. But we flew out there and it was such an amazing experience. And shout out Dances with Films. You could tell they really, really cared about their filmmakers and making the experience great. So yeah, just tell me what, I guess, led up to that experience and how your time was with that.
So that was, Dances with Films is one of those... in my opinion, it's one of the most underrated film festivals that I've experienced so far in terms of quality. And you said it already, in terms of just the dedication to the filmmakers. in, you know, I was talking to a few filmmakers there, and there was this kind of collective agreement that in some ways it felt like some who had been to Sundance at some point, it was a kind of that early indie kind of vibe to it that Sundance used to have, in terms of, you know, we're not looking for big names, we're not looking for stars or you know, already coming in with sales attached, that kind of thing. This is pure independent filmmaking celebrated on a big scale. And that was and it was a hell of an experience. In fact, that was so leading up to it, it was we, you know, to be totally honest, we had a hard time finding a home for Americano. It was kind of a you know, I made the film as a, you know, kind of tapping into the DNA of a thriller. But also, you know, there was a socially relevant message attached to it because it was something that was deeply meaningful for me. And, you know, a lot of film festivals didn't really know what to do with it. It was kind of like, I kept getting back, this is a great film, but I'm not sure how to program it. Right. And it's kind of like, you know, it's, I made it to be accessible for a large audience. And I think that was one of the challenges of trying to find a specific audience that would latch onto it, at least from the festival circuit. So, Dances with Films saw that, and that was one of the things that they came back to me with, is we appreciate the accessibility you have with this film. This isn't just mm-hmm. talking to the art house crowd or the kind of the mindless Hollywood kind of state. This is, you know, so that was one thing that they got it. They saw that. And that was something that mm-hmm. was really valuable for us.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, we both know about Americano, but tell everyone else, what is Americano? What's it about? What was your winning pitch? If you don't remember your winning pitch, I can pull it up.
I don't remember the winning pitch. Otherwise, you know, I used to just jokingly tell people it was a delicious coffee beverage, but it is top line kind of description of the film was really, it's about a refugee who challenges a political kind of demagogue in the city, who is, you know, has to basically challenge, he's challenged to redefine patriotism in a way. And here it's this refugee who's trying to find his place in this country, is manipulated by this politician and sees an opportunity to do the right thing. Something that a lot of us struggle with in terms of, you know, do I step up? Do I speak out mm-hmm. or do I keep my head down and go with the flow of things and no one will notice, or I'll, you know, be able to stay safe and protected. So I thought, wouldn't it be, you know, for me, it was like, if a refugee who's already at risk of being deported and losing hope can take a stand, why can't we? And that was kind of the whole idea of, the thesis of the film was to relook at patriotism and relook what would go into defining that American dream. What does that mean for people? So I think we've all taken advantage of it in some ways. But if you have, I forget the actual log line.
I do. I was able to, you could hear my loud mechanical keyboard clicking away. So if anyone at home or wherever you're listening to this wants to check it out, you can go to thefilmfund.co, and that's .co. They wanted about $20,000 for the .com, which is just egregious. So if you ever go onto our website, it's thefilmfund.co/examples. You can see real winning sentences from our winners, as well as some hypothetical funny ones I've made up as well as with our other judges. But here's Americano. And I didn't even know it was called Americano. That's kind of part of the simplicity of it. We don't need a whole pitch deck for your film. We need one sentence. And this was Tim's one sentence, the first funding recipient ever of the Film Fund. So here we go. When an undocumented refugee hacker discovers evidence linking a politician to a tragedy on social media, he teams up with a PR director to expose the story. Film is shot, need funds for audio post. And that's it. So it gives us, that one sentence gives us a lot there. It gives us a compelling presence, honestly, riddled with conflict. I don't know if riddled is the right word there, but it is just, you have a hacker discovering evidence, you have a tragedy on social media, you have a PR director exposing a story. There's so much conflict in that one sentence. And then we have the funding use. It's very clear. It's very direct. He needs funds for audio post-production. So we are getting into different prizes with post-production and production, but this was the first one. So we didn't delineate them at all. And we still don't. We cater the prizes to what the funding use is. But I want to look at this sentence, and it's just, you get, we read that, and honestly, we were just like, holy shit, like this is crazy. And it's just so relevant. And even though it was a few years ago, it's still relevant. Obviously, we've had such a crazy year. Today's Veterans Day, and I'm sure there are mixed feelings about Veterans Day today. And it's just, but this movie, this short film, like Tim was saying, it's about patriotism. It's about that American dream. So I think a good question, Tim, for you is how does this film define patriotism, and how does it define that American dream?
Well, first I'll say that, my God, that was well more articulate than what I spewed back at you in terms of describing the
film.
Well,
you wrote it, so I did, and won, so good job.
It was funny, I'll just a quick story. When I found the film fund, it was one of those things where I'm thinking, you know what? I put so much thought, overthought, into writing everything. I'm like, let me just, I just kind of sat back and said, what is this damn thing about? Like high level. And, you know, mm-hmm. there's all these formulas for log lines, which I would say, take them, look at them, and then disregard them. Like, mm-hmm. and then I just wrote it without thinking. And that was, honestly, it was more genuine. And I think it was just a little takeaway there from that experience.
And that's what we strive for. We want to get to that heart of that story.
Like, and that's one of the things, the benefit of the film fund. It's kind of, it forces that simplicity. And it was actually a very good exercise for me to go through, because it, you know, I came away with a very strong way of describing the film. And that was what we used for, we used that kind of DNA and that log line, and we were able mm-hmm. to use it for our Kickstarter. We were able to use it in the room with our executive producer. So it was really helpful.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And just a quick aside too, you can use funding from the film fund with Kickstarter, with Indiegogo, with Seed and Spark. We don't care. Like, yeah, you could say maybe they're competitors. I call them alternative funding sources. You could win $5,000 from the film fund and pair that with $5,000 from a Kickstarter campaign. You know, it's, I just want to make that clear too. Like, we just want to make films happen. It's not an official tagline, but that could be a tagline. We make films happen. I don't hate that. I'm going to talk to our marketing team maybe later.
I like it.
But you dodged the question, Tim. Patriotism.
Well, I think that very term right now, I think, has been it's a bit controversial now, isn't it? I feel like we've got...
That's why I'm asking about it.
It's, you ask two different people, two different citizens, you're going to get two very different answers, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's the one side of it, which is the outward symbol, the embracing of symbols and, you know, old ideas in some ways, or traditional ideas. You know, I think they're not wrong per se, but I think when you attach symbolism and iconography and, you know, going back to, you know, I think there's a big emphasis on defense and, you know, celebrating ideals, you know, in the traditional sense. I think there's that kind of camp. And then there's the other camp, which is the idea that patriotism is the celebration of the kind of ideals that make the country what it is. And, you know, with that, I'm talking about, you know, the chance of a new life coming from another country, or even the country you're in. Maybe you're not doing so well right now, but there's a possibility of something greater than what's happening right now. It's a love of that potential, and I think it's, you know, the country itself is built to enable that potential to happen, mm-hmm. and I think, to me, that patriotism is a love of that, and the fair chance of that happening.
Yeah.
I don't.
And it's so funny that. Sorry. Go ahead.
No. The only thing I was going to say was the symbols come next. They come last, in my opinion. Like, the flag mm-hmm. represents that, that opportunity. You know, it's not the other way around.
I 100% agree. And it's almost, again, like you said, my answer of patriotism is going to differ from another citizen's definition of patriotism, but it's almost like that American dream has become distorted by some people in this country. Like what you just said back to me about seeing opportunity, that's always been the American dream. There's always, you know, that's how this country was built, for opportunity, the land of opportunity. And yes, you can, you know, we don't have a great history with, you know, taking the country from Native Americans and things like that, but their opportunity has always been here. And it seems like that has been harder to see recently. And it's obviously been harder for a lot of people to achieve recently. But that, going back to accessibility of your film, I think that is an amazing parallel too, because if you look at all the different characters in the film, and we'll get to where you can watch it in a second, patriotism and the American dream, it almost means something different to each character in that film. You have the main political demagogue. His definition of patriotism seems like it's power. You have the refugee hacker. He wants freedom. He wants a better life. He just wants to be able to live as a citizen. He's being manipulated. You have the, I forget her name, to be honest with you. Apologies. The political employee who kind of works for the campaign.
Gets in
touch with the press. Yeah. Billy, yeah. You know, she's kind of torn between the two. So I think the parallels between what's happening in the world right now and how patriotism is kind of shifting and becoming more difficult for people, it's reflected so well in your film, even though, I mean, God, you started pre-production on that film probably, what, 3 years ago now?
Yeah, we had... well, I got to tell you, the inception for the whole thing started with, God, that word is now forever attached to Leo DiCaprio, isn't it? it started with Chris Mendoza, who's my producing partner over at Maestro Filmworks. We were kind of going back and forth with, like, let's do something big, kind of creative, mm-hmm. and narrative, because we were both doing a lot of corporate work at the time. We're trying to find something we can kind of sink our teeth into that was relevant. And we were, when obviously the 2016 election happened, and it was so just completely divisive, and I definitely lost some relationships because of that one, but it definitely lit a fire in me and so many other artists in so many different ways, because it wasn't even just about the election. It was about everything else that was surfacing, that was there the whole time. It was just bubbling up, and we needed to say something. It was like, how do you contribute to that conversation? And I had been at the, I had attended the protest at Philly International Airport right after the Muslim ban happened. Mm-hmm. And when I was there, it was profoundly moving, because you were talking to people, you know, a lot of folks were just arriving in Philly from some of these countries that were being shut down, you know, just firsthand accounts of how people were feeling. There was this general sense of, this is wrong. You know, it wasn't just you know, we could talk about immigration policy all we want. There's obviously some flaws in that system, but at its core, there was a human story there that was just like screaming at me. Like, we need this. This needs mm-hmm. to be a thing. We need to address this. And it was, you know. And then when I was talking with Chris, it was an easy decision. This is the story we want to tell. You know, and then we just kind of solidified that with the story. But and then
how did you land on the name Americano?
It actually means it's translated to American. Mm-hmm. And it was something that we based in a coffee shop, so it was kind of a nod to not to the actual coffee drink. And then the third dimension was that it was actually the coffee drink came from, little fun fact, it came from World War II soldiers who kind of didn't have access to lots of coffee, so it was kind of like, it was just seeped in just the kind of American
ubiquitous.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it. Yeah, I've always, and that scene in the film where the barista says Americano for Billy. It's just such, there's so much tension there. I just love it. If you haven't seen the film, definitely go check it out. It's no longer on the physical festival circuit, especially now with COVID. But it is available on, I guess, Apple, iTunes. I forget. They're changing the platform name so much.
It is on.
We have it linked on our website.
Yes, it's on iTunes right now. Yes, it was on Amazon, but there has been some changes on the Amazon platform too. So you can absolutely guarantee see it on iTunes right now.
iTunes. Go to iTunes, search Americano, or go to the Film Fund website /previous winners. There's a hyphen in there, so it's easier just to go to the website. But if you search iTunes, you'll find it. And that was made with the Film Fund and a lot of blood, sweat, tears. Did you cry at all?
All three, my man. All three. All
right. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that. What, maybe not the crying part. I don't want to go there. Not that kind of podcast. What were some of the challenging aspects of the production? Lessons you learned? We talked about themes and inspirations, but I mean, we talked about that feeling of being on set, how invigorating it is. Tell me about that.
It's invigorating,
or maybe
right?
When you wanted to pull your hair out.
I was surprised it wasn't more gray at the end of this, to be honest with you.
you do have a hat on, so maybe.
I do have a hat on. It was unlike anything I've ever done before. Like it was huge. And it was, we actually quite a turnout in terms of people willing to say yes for a, you know, it was a short film. We didn't have a big budget. So we tapped a lot of our resources and references and, you know, folks, once they knew what the story was about, they were on, they were happy to participate. But we, you know, we paid everyone a good rate as much as we could. But it was, you know, at one point on set, we had like 50 people. It was the biggest thing I've ever done. Big set for a short. Yeah. And that was another kind of, I don't know if you want to go through any kind of takeaways, but that was one of the biggest takeaways that I was talking to, Adam Boudron, who's the star of it. We had a lot of discussions leading up to it and quite a few afterwards. And one of the things and actually Rick Schneider as well, who plays Hollister, the politician, currently seen in Morgan and Morgan commercials, by the way,
I've seen them.
He's fantastic. And pure gentleman. But there's, we talked a lot about the fact that the story is so big that, you know, folks who do watch it kind of go, where's the rest? And I, you know, it's one of those things where a key takeaway was, you know, find the smallest story you can, you know, and that was one of the things that was a big story for a short. And I'm saying this because I'm teeing up the next story, which is that we failed the first time we went to go shoot it. It was I think we allotted 4 days for production in March. It was a very cold March. It was the end of the third day, I believe, that we lost a lot of time, various reasons. I won't go into all of them right now, but it was just too big to shoot. It was too much. And one of those things that it was, I'll never forget looking at Chris, and we both had the epiphany, like, shit, we're not going to finish. And we had to kind of do some damage control. I rewrote the script, the last act of the script, all night, going into the fourth day, and completely sleep deprived. All of us were just completely exhausted. So the fourth day was not where it should have been.
Were the tears came in.
Where the tears came in. and it was just absolutely just, I've never, you know, and I'm, you know, I'm a dad, but I've never felt exhaustion like this before. It was some other level. And so what we decided to do was let's get in the can what we can. And let's put a cut together of some kind, get a sense of what we have. So we did that. We pieced it together. We looked and we saw the gaps. I did another polish on the script to get us tighter and tighter and tighter. Took out, you know, we ran through our budget from Kickstarter. So I took out a little personal bit from my own savings. And we got back in to the, everyone was available still, thank God. Month later, we got back on set and we banged the sucker out. And that was a huge learning experience for me, because that feeling of complete failure, at least I felt like that. I'm like, we had, sure. you know, 90 people submit Kickstarter donations to us. We had friends and family kind of just eagerly waiting to see what this is going to be. We had the, you know, the Philadelphia Film Office was involved. We had all these places rented out. Everyone was dying to see the film. So I felt like there was this, you know, it's our reputations were kind of, we were looking at, it was the, you know, the sense of the project itself. We were promising this film. And so it just felt, it felt pretty horrible when we couldn't deliver that first time. It was on me. But then,
is that when you found the film funder? Or did that come later?
That came later once we found, once we finished, we finally got our heads around that last act and we were able to put that together and shoot it. And once we got that in the can, we found this like completely new sense of momentum. And that's when Chris and I were like, so we did a really good job getting funds for production. We have we nothing for post. So that's another lesson there is, you know, don't just think about production, think about post. So that was, you know, we had kind of searched around and we came across the film fund, and that was when we said, you know, we need to finish this thing. And I had spoken to, there's a sound house in Philly called I can't remember the exact name of it, but
I could dig in my email.
Yeah, it's
pull it up, but
there shake. I think it's Shake Audio. Yeah,
Shake Down,
Shake Sound, maybe.
Apologies to the wonderful post production people at Shake Down Street. Are we making this a Grateful Dead podcast now? I don't know.
We'll put it
in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely. The name I want to really put out there is Matt Amadio, and he's our sound designer of the film, and he did a phenomenal job. And Mark Schultz over there as well. And they gave us an incredible deal. And they gave us time in their studio, and the mixing was absolutely fantastic, brought it to life on a whole new level. And that was what the film fund, allowed us to do. So that was a big deal for us. Like we didn't have a film until the film fund came through.
We were so happy to help with that as well. We saw this amazing story and it said it needed funds for post. I'm like, well, that's a great use of funding. So we're happy to help out there. And that was the first project ever that we did. I mean, we've produced upwards of 20 now, but to have you as the first funding recipient on the first episode of the Film Fund podcast, I just thought was, oh, well, this is a no-brainer. And so we're so happy to help out with that. How did you find the film fund? I know, well, I do know how you found it, but I want you to say it because it's a show. But I guess tell me about your journey of, you know, searching for different funding opportunities for once you knew you needed funding for post.
We hit a couple different places. We went through No Film School's got a really strong list of funding opportunities. We hit you Google extensively. I can't remember the exact search thread that I plugged in, but it was, you know, we didn't have time for grant money. We didn't want to wait. You know, it was something like we wanted to hit our deadline was the Sundance deadline. You know, not assuming we were going to get in, but we used that as a deadline. And we were like, we don't have time to find grant money. We don't have time to go through doing the Kickstarter campaign. Like, we just don't have time. And that was where we found the film fund. And that was where we saw this opportunity. It was pitched as, you know, something that was a very simple execution. And that was very super appealing for us because it was practical, and it was enabling, which I think is really, which is really powerful. So that was the track and the reasoning behind it. But that, yeah,
yeah. So because you were Googling film funding, film grants, and you found the No Film School thread, and there we were. And that is kind of how you were talking about practicability. We'll go with that. And simplicity, that's our big thing. We want it to be as simple as possible. Grants are great. Crowdfunding campaigns are great. Screenwriting contests are great, but they take time and they take a lot of energy. So we just won. How I started with it, the film fund creating it, just a quick story there. I was looking for funding myself. I wrote a short script, you know, kind of on the side. I was actually still in school at the time. And I was trying to fund it. I applied to two grants. I met with one grant committee. I won't name who it is, but they encourage you to meet with them beforehand, get any notes or suggestions. And the woman on the committee actually goes to me, you know, this is looking really, really good. I'm not supposed to tell you this, but you're likely going to get this grant. And I didn't get it. And this is months and 20 pages of it. And I was just, there has to be a better way. So like, why don't we just take the simplest thing possible? One sentence about your film. The initial idea was supposed to be a lottery where there was nothing about the film. You just enter a lottery, but turns out that's completely illegal. And unless you have some kind of lottery license from the state, I thought about looking at, there was one loophole I found where if you own a bar, you can run some kind of lottery raffle thing. So I was like, am I going to buy a bar and open up?
But I would have considered that. That'd be a
yeah. I was like, oh, maybe I'll go to a bank, get a loan,
get a pint and a funding at the same time.
It's yeah, great. There we go. It's, you know, maybe that'll be phase two of the film fund. But the simplicity aspect is what I wanted to focus on, and I knew there had to be a simpler way and simpler execution than waiting months and months and months. So I was curious how you found the film fund and what your thinking was when you saw it.
It was immediate. We got to give this a go. And I, you know, and I had similar experience to you, and I think other filmmakers would probably agree with this. At some point of their journey, this has happened where you have to, you put your pitch deck together, you know, you think about, you put your mood board together, you put together the objective of the film, kind of what the, maybe the market, you know, you think about, you put together your whole package in terms of DP and producer and stars, and you make it look as attractive as possible to get some of this funding. And similar situation, we had gone, I did apply for some grants, and you're in this endless cycle of, you know, maybe not. And we had something similar. We're like, well, you're looking pretty solid. And then some people just shut us down immediately. Mm-hmm. Also the fact that it's a short film was challenging.
Yeah.
There's very little,
no one wants to fund them. And we just saw that with Quibi. I mean, God, how many billions of dollars did that go?
It was a $6-7 billion. Yeah, it was insane.
Crazy. Yeah. I was interested from the beginning. You have Jeffrey Katzenberg, you have, you know, ton of experienced executives, but I'm also thinking most people don't pay to watch shorts. You can watch Americano on iTunes. I think that's a bit of an exception, but there's also so much free content out there, and it's, people aren't going to the movie theaters to watch them. So I don't know. I just, the landscape is changing. The distribution is changing, but by and large, short films don't make money from what I've seen. So to have an entire platform based on premium content for shorts is just, we saw. So the ROI is in there. So it makes it difficult to fund too. I mean, it's sad that they don't make money. No one's quitting their day job to solely make short films.
It's unsustainable. Yeah.
Yeah, it's no. I see them as calling cards. I see them as resumes. Here's what I can do. Let me make a feature kind of thing. Here's my voice. It's a training ground too. Like, I want to experiment. I want to practice that dolly shot. I want to practice that weird zoom. I want to practice the vertigo, all that stuff that you might not take a chance with on a feature. But all of that's amazing, and it's so important for filmmakers to have that playground. But I mean, who's going to give $8,000 to someone to play around?
So
until the film fund, that's kind of that gap we wanted to fill.
It's a very important gap to fill. And so for the most part, so we got a little lucky. And I, you know, as anyone will tell you in this business, in this art form, a little luck can go a long way. We had, I'm not sure how much time I have, but I'll try to keep this short. But and some people know the story, but we had a connection at, I can't remember exactly where it was, where the exchange happened. My mother-in-law actually was worked for a brokerage, and she had got this great relationship, rapport up with one of the clients, and they were talking casually in between things one day, and you know, she said, I want you to give me one of your postcards for Americano. I'm like, no, I it's okay. Don't worry about it. We'll, you know, mm-hmm. Just let me know. If you talk to somebody, if they're interested, I can reach out to them. She's like, no, give me a postcard. So I gave her one of the postcards. We had distributed these all over. We actually had my brother who lives in LA, put them all at coffee shops. We had them here. Mm-hmm. This is for the Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And I must have printed like 500, 1,000 of these things.
Oh God. Was that in the budget?
Let's say yes. Added line item. I just, you know,
yep.
At insert row in Excel.
Yep.
So we had basically zero return on those things. Like you text a number. I had a whole group text set up. I had the whole platform. I had the whole channel set up. I was proud of myself. But then, you know, nothing came back. So it was basically Kickstarter was coming from leads from Facebook. And one of the things that, if you don't know yet, with Kickstarter and Seed and Spark and a lot of those, it really is your immediate network that's going to get you started. And you have to build momentum first, and then you go out further than that. You have to kind of prove that people are interested in it, and then other people jump in the water with you. Mm-hmm.
There's a great book out there called The Business of Crowdfunding, but it's by the Stage 32 guy. Definitely recommended read. He basically says, get all of your supporters on board before you even launch your crowdfunding campaign. You should be planning for your crowdfunding campaign 3 to 6 months in advance.
100%. It's a pre-campaign campaign. It's kind of
exactly.
For sure. And it works. But the one, so out of that, out of those 500 postcards we got, zero return except for from 499 of them. One of them was given to the executive producer of John Wick. And I was in a meeting, a marketing meeting, and my phone starts buzzing at me. You've achieved your goal at Kickstarter. Wow. And of course I'm like, and everything else that was said in the room was just blah, 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 blah. So excuse me. So I step out and my jaw's on the floor because someone had just given $5,000 to be an executive producer level coming at that level of Kickstarter. Right. And I get a phone call from his assistant, like, say, hey, Kevin wants to talk to you about your film. The assistant's clearly confused because he's like, who is this guy?
Who is this guy?
This is a short film? What? Like, it doesn't, none of this makes any sense. It's not practical.
Exactly.
So I went with it. I called Chris Mendoza, my producer, and he's, Chris is, and you know Chris as well. He's a very cool cat. So you tell him big news. He's like, that's great.
Oh,
that's
cool.
Yeah, cool. He's excited, but he
doesn't show it as much.
Calm. So we were, I just was freaking out because not only we're ready now to move into production, we got our green light, but now we have someone who's in our corner who could potentially take us even further. Mm-hmm. You know, and we had screened the film for him. Once we wrapped, we went to his house. We interrupted a phone call with Mark Wahlberg, which was amusing. And we sat down and he was a good chap. Like we just hung out, and you know, a big takeaway too was we weren't ready for a feature pitch, and I'm working on a feature right now, but I wasn't ready. I hadn't had the pitch solidified yet. Mm-hmm. And the first thing out of his mouth when we sat down before we even screened the damn film, what's your feature? And I'm like, So Chris to this day will not let me forget this. But you know, I stumbled a bit. I was just making up a feature film about Americano on the spot, and it wasn't, you know, wasn't thought out. I didn't do my homework. And it was it was kind of like he was willing to go into the feature discussion without even seeing the short film. You know, the short film was basically, he told me, like, the short film was just a proof that you can shoot, that you can do a film.
We were talking about earlier.
Exactly.
Calling cards and resumes.
Full circle. Yeah. That's really what it's there for. So that was a huge wake-up call for me. Huge. You know, in terms of, you know, this is an art form, but it's still a business. And that was, we walked away, probably the biggest lesson was that, it was.
Always have the feature in your back
pocket. Always have something in your back pocket. So that was
great. It's so interesting how you were able to use these different sources of funding too. You have the Kickstarter and then you have the film fund, and now it's like, oh, I made this awesome, amazing, powerful short film. What do I do with it? So yes, it's always helpful to have those plans. And that, I guess that's a huge lesson learned for me, like you said too.
Huge. Yeah.
Yep. Go ahead.
No, just be ready.
Better at not interrupting people on this podcast.
No, actually, there's not a big latency. This is great. Always be ready. Always be ready.
Yep. Always be ready.
Always be closing.
Oh, God. I won't get into that other scene in that movie. So I guess in terms of the feature, that is unrelated to Americano, as we've discussed, right? The one you're currently working on?
Yes. It was one of those things where, and, you know, I've talked to a lot of filmmakers too, and this happens when you spend so much time with a subject or an idea that there's a point where it just becomes, you've exhausted that idea to a point where
you put your baby up for adoption.
You need to move on. You could go into every nook and cranny of any film anyone ever does, and find a story there. But this is, there are other stories that I need to tell, and that's where I'm moving on to.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about that project at all?
I mean, we're getting close to talking about it. It's in the second draft right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I think going back to your point about COVID, I think a lot of filmmakers have had to put stuff on hold, or they're just endless cycle of pre-production.
I have a short myself.
Do you?
In quote unquote pre-production. Yeah. It's just the script's done, copyrighted. I had a whole pre-pro list and budget laid out, and COVID. So
yeah,
feel that.
Yeah, I hear you. And it's like, what do you want to, I thought about just giving it a shot, but my goal right now is to really crack the writing of this right now. Mm-hmm. So it's that mm-hmm. I can't do both at the same time.
We are launching a feature film funding program with the film fund. It's very, very early in the stages of that. So I don't have too many details I can share, but keep it in the back of your mind, you and the listeners out there, because it's coming. Yeah. It'll be a similar model. It'll be a little different than the short film format with the one sentence pitch. We're going to need a little bit more, but we still want to keep it as simple as possible, for sure.
I mean, feature filmmaking itself is even more approachable. Mm-hmm. You know, I think record numbers of features now submitted to these festivals at this point. Yep. So it's almost like I struggle with even getting people to do shorts at this point, because I mean, to your point, obviously it's incredibly important to exercise the, mm-hmm. you know, the muscle, like how do you want to mm-hmm. move the camera? How do you want to, you know, there's all this speak about finding your voice. I think it's a lot of pressure when you hear that, right?
It's so much pressure. It's so much pressure. I mean, I love the film fund. I love it. I'm super passionate about it. When I get those emails responding, or when I send the email saying, hey, congratulations, or even just opening new funding contests and just talking with the filmmakers, I have a quasi pen pal in Bangladesh who just emails me and says, hi, like, how are you doing? It's amazing to talk with these filmmakers, but my dream is to do this and also write, direct, and produce feature films. But I wouldn't step on one, because of COVID, I don't want to have all those COVID precautions, which are necessary right now. But my dream is to do feature films, but I need to hone my voice a little bit more with shorts. I may have derailed your point. I'm a very amazing podcast host, taking what my guests say and twisting them into something about myself.
No, that's the best.
But yeah, finding your voice is important, but go on with what you were going to say.
Well, it's just a lot of,
there's pressure there.
It is pressure to find your voice. Cause what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, like in terms exactly. of it's, you know, is it a camera style? Is it a way of writing? Is it a way of editing? It's all that stuff. It's all that put together. Mm-hmm. And it's, I agree. Shorts are a way to do that, but there's a point where you can get lost in a vicious cycle of just shorts. And like to my example earlier, what the market really wants. And I'm not talking about the market as in right to the market. Obviously that's a bad idea. But in terms of kind of what you could, you know, if content is king, distribution is, you know, is God, essentially. Like mm-hmm. if features allow distribution to happen, you know, there's a why not find your voice in a feature? Now there's a lot of people that disagree with me on that one, but that's kind of where I'm at right now, at least with my trajectory.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And I think we also need to take a step back and ask ourselves, would you be saying that if you didn't have a short under your belt already that has done incredibly well?
Probably not. That you do need to start somewhere. And obviously the first mm-hmm. thing you do, you don't want it to just be a feature. That's not going to work.
Yeah.
But in terms of
exactly,
if you feel like, and I talk to other filmmakers about this too, there's a sense that I have to do more shorts because I don't have my voice yet. I'm like, I think you did. If you've done a couple of shorts, like there, it's in there somewhere. Exactly.
If you have I think you have a few under your belt, you have a wheelhouse you're familiar with at this point. It's when you're doing the 10th short, like, oh, are you packaging it as an anthology, like feature length? No, I just like that.
Yeah.
That's like, okay, well, why, you could have taken the budget from those last five shorts and done a micro feature.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So I think that is something to think about as well. And a lot of it has to do with entrepreneurship too. Like I don't call him my quote unquote first hire because he's not full time yet, but our digital content producer, Tom, it's funny. My script is called the Toms because I keep meeting people named Tom. So our content producer is named Tom. It's hysterical, but that's a different conversation. It's trusting in yourself and it's having that confidence to go out and, you know, go to that next step and letting go and letting be. And now I sound like a Buddhist monk, but it's true. It's like you can't get stuck in that cycle of doing shorts forever, as important as they are. You do need to move. If you want to be a feature filmmaker, you have to make a feature film at some point. Now I'm not saying there's a magic number there. Maybe for some people that's 5 shorts until you feel comfortable. Maybe it's 3, maybe it's 2. And they are so important. Otherwise the film fund wouldn't be here.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I think you do need to make that jump to features, and we're so excited to get that feature program off the ground. Hopefully in the next few months, but we'll see.
Yeah, there's a place for all of these. Well, that's the beautiful thing about it. It really goes back to, and you already said it, goes back to your goals. Like if I've seen some amazing things happening on Instagram right now for micro shorts, you know, like
it's crazy. I mean, Maestro Filmworks has that initiative. I don't know if initiative is the right word, but Make Long Story Shorts.
Yep.
They're doing high production value micro content. It's incredible, which I think you may have directed.
I did one. Yep. That was a shit ton of fun. Like that's the thing too. Have fun on these. Like you're supposed to have fun on shorts and kind of experiment. So that's 100%. You need to do it. Especially when you think about your platform, some people are really good content creators for social. And there's an industry. Absolutely. You can make a lot of money on that. YouTube. Yeah. But if your goal is to be a feature filmmaker, then yeah, you have to actually move into that medium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Shorts are great. They're a playground. They're so, so vital to experiment and calling cards. But I do see them as a stepping stone to something greater, which we're incredibly excited.
Yeah.
For now, we're doing shorts though with the Film Fund. And we have 3 contests open. We have the narrative contest, the documentary contest, and the new music video contest where you can receive up to $10,000 to direct the music video for a musician, Mike Vermeil. I was going to say single out, but I think it's actually part of a larger album. He has a song out called Wit Talk, and it's an absolutely incredible song. It's upbeat. It's about expressing yourself in different ways, and it's so relevant right now. So go check it out and submit a pitch for the music video, and you can receive up to 10 grand to direct that. Also, the same goes for the documentary and the narrative contest. And again, if you're listening to this at a later date, we are always holding contests. So if one isn't open, say you check the site in the middle of January, sign up for the emails and you will stay up to date on our newsletter and our social media posts. And we also give you great filmmaking tips and producing tips and film funding tips. Everything about, we focus on the producing end of things rather than the production end of things a lot of the time. So go check that out, thefilmfund.co/blog. Okay, this has been amazing. Thank you, Tim. Is there anything else? I was going to, I keep having in my show notes here from Tom, the producer, and he keeps talking about, Tim, include funny anecdotes. Do we want to go into that story by the pool at Dances with Films about the gin version? I've been trying to work it in throughout the whole show, and it hasn't come up naturally, so I figured I would just bring it up now. I don't know. Maybe we'll save that.
Which I was trying to remember, because I know, was that the...
I'll just say it. So it was the one at Dances with Films at that swanky pool party at that hotel on I guess it was Hollywood Boulevard.
The Roosevelt Hotel. Yeah.
The Roosevelt. Yeah, yeah. It was so much fun. And I had recently discovered that I like gin, even though now I'm not even sure if I do.
Oh, I remember now.
I was on like a gin kick, and we were at the bar and we were looking at drinks and cocktails, and I was like, oh, I've been really into gin like lately. And Tim just completely wrecks me. Doesn't even mean to do it. Doesn't even know what he's doing. And he doesn't even look up from the menu. He just goes, oh yeah, gin. It's a little too floral for me. My wife likes it though. And I'm just standing there with the menu in my hand and being like, oh my God, this guy, I don't even know what to think now. Is he messing with me? Is he trying to emasculate me? It was just so, we can get into gender stereotypes and roles all day, whatever you want to talk about. But ever since then, Chris calls me floral. The whole flight back home, my nickname was Floral. Like, hey, come here, Floral. He'll text me about the sponsorship coming up. Hey, Floral.
Oh, man.
So I have to live with that. It's rough. I feel like Chris gets more more enjoyment out of this than either of us do. But I thought it was a funny story that we had together by the pool. I wanted to bring it up, and I didn't know how, so I threw it in at the end.
No. That's a good way to end it. Yeah, that was a hell of a trip.
And speaking of Chris, I believe he is our next guest for next week. So Chris runs Meister Filmworks, also out of Philly. We're staying local here for now, even though the Film Fund is international, except for Iran right now. Unfortunately, there are some sanctions there, so we aren't able to accept entries. But I think every other country has been going pretty well. So if you live in Australia, if you live in London, if you live in Canada, if you live in Texas, sometimes that's a different country, depending on who you ask. check us out. Again, it's thefilmfund.co. Tim, thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to add?
Just that, you know, the film community is better for you guys being in it. And so thank you for offering, filling this really important gap for all of us.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Again, thank you so much for stopping by. I think this episode went well. What do you think?
Yeah, I do.
First one.
This is cool. A pretty good one. Awesome. I've been pretty proud to have this as my first one.
Awesome. I am as well. Great. I'll talk to you soon, Tim. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Tom.
See you next week.